We have our 25-year-old daughter, Kasaya, who is she's a wonderful person, and she's fully dependent, handicap, and has been the greatest trial and the greatest joy of our lives. I'll share a bit of that story a little later. But we also have, back in Alberta, Canada, many of our lifetime friends. And I had received, just before we left for Arlington 7 weeks ago, a text from one of my closest friends, just an affirming pat on the back, God bless you guys, Daryl, as you go to Arlington. And I'd been saving this well-worded text to share with Birgit. So we're about 45 minutes out from meeting the staff team 7 weeks ago. We're walking here just around the corner from the DoubleTree Hilton Hotel with a Starbucks coffee in hand. It was a warm Saturday morning, and I thought this is a great time to pause on the street corner and share this text with my wife, Birgit. So I place my coffee on some kind of box that was there. I pull my phone out of my back pocket. I call up that text. I read Birgit the text. I put the phone back in my back pocket, grab my coffee, and a bird poops on my head. So fortunately, I clean up rather well. So we made our way over to the California Pizza Kitchen and immediately fell in love with the staff team. And we've been praying for this church family ever since that time. I want to speak with you for a while today about your personal life journey relative to God. Your unique trajectory in relation to God. Now, the Bible tells us in Romans chapter 1 that God is knowable. We can know there's a God by looking at the things that He's created. And that gives us a clue that there's got to be a plan. For anyone who designs something has a purpose in his or her mind when he or she does so. And so when it comes to your life and my life, God has a purpose and a plan. There is intelligent and intentional design. So in your personal life journey and in your unique trajectory in this life, you are either moving in tandem or toward those purposes and plans for your life, or you are moving away from them. And to help illustrate my point today, we're going to journey briefly to three cities: modern day Hollywood, ancient Laodicea, and the cultural hub of Athens, Greece. As we enter each city, we will note a precautionary roadside marker. At the close of the message, I will overlay one potential life-altering truth, and then Pastor Steve will come up and close in a word of prayer. But just before we begin that trip together, I want to take a short pre-journey stopover in the region of the Northwest Territories, just north of the northernmost part of Canada. The city is Yellowknife, and the year is the mid-1980s, my college years. Now, I know some of you are doing the math right now. And yes, you're right. That puts me at just about 40 years of age. Okay, so I'm working between semesters of college in this northern, relatively remote community. And I've got two roommates, and it's the weekend, and we decided we're going to go do some fishing. And so we had brought along, you know, a small tackle box each, you know, almost the size of a toddler's purse or something, you know, just a little rattly thing, and each a fishing pole. We parked this old truck on the side of the highway and started to make our way through the forest to this little lake to do some fishing. As we're walking through there, and my roommates are ahead of me, I'm taking up the rear, I noticed approaching from behind two wolves. And not stealth, in a stealth kind of mode, but I'm talking in an animated, I'm going to kill you kind of fashion. And so I yell to my roommates, run! And we start running literally what we believed was for our lives. And as we're running, you know, we've got this fishing pole and this tackle box, and it's awkward. And I can see that the wolves are gaining on us as they're advancing. And so I just yell, drop your stuff! Throw everything! And so the guys, we throw our stuff into the woods, and we keep running. Well, I can see they're still gaining on us. So in a last-ditch effort to save myself and my roommates, I actually turn around. That's what my college degree was for, to turn around and run toward wolves. That's the smart thing to do. So I start running toward the wolves. And when I'm about to kind of make contact with them, I dig my heels in, I thrust my arms in the air as high as I can, and I yell at the top of my lungs, which I won't do right now, and for some reason I close my eyes. I don't know. Chalk it up to scared of dying or what. I don't know. And I close my eyes and I yell, ah! At the top of my lungs. And I thought the first thing that crossed my mind is, good, I'm still alive. And I look down, and what is standing before me but two oversized husky sled dogs, thinking no doubt to themselves, what's his problem? So we gather our stuff. We make our way back through the trail. Forget about fishing. We've had enough of an adventure already. Only to find that this large truck is stuck in the ditch on a highway. Now, we were just driving this morning from where we're staying in Falls Church to Tyson's Corner. At one point, I counted 16 lanes wide. This highway is gravel, and it's one lane wide. Well, finally, a large monster truck, four-wheel drive vehicle, pulls up with a winch and is capable of pulling this work vehicle of ours out of the ditch that we had inadvertently gotten stuck. So while they're pulling the vehicle out, the traffic is slowly starting to accumulate on the highway. And I don't know what got over me, but I decided to do something fun. I haven't had enough of an adventure that day. So I start going up to the first vehicle. I've got a camera around my shoulder. I knock on the window, the driver's side door of the first vehicle. This driver does down the window, and I said, excuse me, sir, Hollywood Productions. We're shooting a picture. It's just going to be about another 2 or 3 minutes. And I make my way off to the next vehicle. There's a female in that vehicle. Excuse me, ma'am, Hollywood Productions, we're shooting a picture. It's just going to be about another 2 or 3 minutes. I go to the third vehicle, and the line is going on and on and on. And I go to the third vehicle, window comes down about 2 or 3 inches. Excuse me, sir, Hollywood Productions, we're shooting a picture here, and it's just going to be about another 2 or 3 minutes. And, you know, it's all about the whole confidence thing. You know, I think I could make an FBI agent. I don't know, it's just a thing. Okay, so I'm walking there. I go up to the, and I can hear this guy's window squeak down. Squeak, 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 all the way down. I go back, and he yells at the top of his lungs, Hollywood Productions? What are you filming? I hadn't thought about what we were filming. And so the first thing that came to my mind was there was a show on TV years ago about a man who had his own grizzly bear, and it was called Grizzly Adams. So I said, we're filming Grizzly Adams. So this fellow, sadly, he probably watched that show for the next year, hoping to come across this episode that we were in fact not filming. But I tell that story to say this, that with that story, that brings us to the first city. Now, here's the case that I'm going to want to take a few minutes to build with you today. And the case is this. A.W. Tozer, an Alliance author and pastor who has since passed on, wrote, and this is in the 1950s, how much more so is it true today, that we live in a world of nervous activity that occupy time and attention, but can never satisfy the longing of the soul. So I want to build a case for that. We live in a world of nervous activity that occupy time and attention, but can never satisfy the longing of the soul. So as we begin to talk about Hollywood, modern day Hollywood, we see this roadside precautionary marker as we enter the city together. And it reads this: Hollywood, the allure of fame. Why did that guy wind down his window and yell out the car, Hollywood Productions? In some respects, Hollywood is a picture of success. It is the status hub, in some ways, of the Northern Hemisphere. And remember, we're talking about our personal life journey set against the reality of God, our unique trajectory in relation to God. Now, the Bible tells us this about the eternity of God. The Bible tells us that if we look back at some point in the distant past, and if we look at some point in the future as far as the mind can see, the Bible tells us that the eternity of God states that He is present at both points in space and time simultaneously. So everything that will ever happen for Him has already taken place. When we speak of our tomorrows, and it might be a vocational shift, it might be a relational shift, or it may be something in your personal reality, and we say, well, you know, don't worry about that. God will work it out. He'll meet you there tomorrow. Well, the truth is that He is already there. God is present at both points in space and time, and so our personal journey is set against not only this busy reality that we live in, but against this backdrop of greatness, the eternity of God. Now we shift to the ancient city of Laodicea, the financial hub of the then known world. The city of Colossae, where Paul writes to the church in Colossians, to that church that was in that city, had been eclipsed and dwarfed by this giant Laodicea. Watch this. Laodicea lie on a great Asian trade route. The New York, if you would, of the Middle East. It lie in this beautiful valley called the Lycus Valley. There were raven black wool of sheep that were raised in that valley. And from that sheep, they manufactured some of the region's finest clothing. I mean, we're talking the Macy's of the Middle East. They had a medical school. They created and fashioned a salve for the eye that was called Colnerum. If the Harvard Medical Journal had existed, you would find Laodicea's medical system written up in that journal. But here's the big one. It was the center for prosperous banking. It would put the Swiss reality to shame. And with that, we see the precautionary road sign as we enter Laodicea that reads the allure of fiscal strength. And here's what happened. In the year 60 AD, an earthquake cut through that Lycus Valley, destroying much of the city of Laodicea. The Senate in Rome offered to help rebuild the city. And Laodicea responded, no, we've got it covered. Now, Jesus is speaking to the church in Laodicea in Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. And He says this, and watch this. Here I am. I stand at the door, and may I insert, I stand at the door of your busy lives. Jesus is saying, here I am. I stand at the door and knock. He's on the outside of the church. If anyone hears my voice, and sometimes it's hard to hear the voice of God when you're going 1,000 miles an hour, but if you hear the voice of God and open the door, I will come in and eat with you and you with me. And so not only are our personal life's journeys and our unique trajectories set against this backdrop of greatness that God is vast and has existed before time, but it's also set against this backdrop of kindness. Pastor Steve shared 7 weeks ago when we were here, he spoke briefly about the providence of God that simply states that God is perfect and His ways are perfect. God is intimately concerned about your life. And then we approach the last city. And remember, we're trying to build a case here to sort of back up what A.W. Tozer wrote, that we, you and I, the community that I am coming from, is not quite as active or as large as the D.C. metro area. We come from a community that has about 1 million people in it. But in some ways, there are similarities. Hardworking and, in some cases, affluent and highly educated people. And so this is an area where families... The Alliance District in Alberta cited 3 reasons for the drop in weekend attendance in Alliance churches in Alberta. And there's 156 Alliance churches in our province. It's a strong province in that way. But they had cited 3 things: affluence, leisure travel, and weekend sports activities. So a lot of our church families, much like here and certainly the Tyson's Corner site, have a lot of young families. And whether you're a young professional or a mom or you know you're a parent or a grandparent, we live in a reality that Tozer says occupies time and attention but can never satisfy the longing of the soul. So what does it look like? I'm building a case here. Modern-day Hollywood... The status hub, ancient Laodicea, the financial hub. Now we move to the intellectual hub of the then known world, Athens, Greece. And the roadside marker reads, "The allure of mental ascent." Paul is in Athens, Greece in Acts chapter 17. He's in a marketplace known as the Agora. And he's interacting with people. And the Bible says this, that he is preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. And in this marketplace, it was a bit of an intellectual hub, a bit of a think tank, where people came and talked about the different philosophies of the day and just conversed on this level. Well, this piqued the interest of the listeners in the city of Athens, Greece. And they asked Paul, "Would you come to the Areopagus, which is in essence an informal session of the Supreme Court, just down from the many-columned Parthenon on the hill of the Acropolis?" So Paul goes to the Areopagus, and he addresses the Athenians. And he says this: "Men, and might I add women, of Athens, as I've walked around, I see that you are religious in many ways. In fact, I even noticed an altar with this inscription on it, 'To an unknown God.' They were seeking God, but they didn't know the way. In 1960, an altar with that same inscription was unearthed in the city of Pergamum, 'To an unknown God.' And Paul says, 'What you proclaim as unknown, I am about to proclaim to you.' And then what follows is, in my evaluation, one of the most beautiful and thorough passages in the New Testament. Paul says to this intellectual hub of the then known world, 'The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth. And he doesn't live in temples built by human hands. And he's not served by human hands as if he needed anything. But he himself gives all men and women life and breath and everything else. And from one man he made every nation of men and determined the time set for them and the exact places where they should live. God did this so that men and women would reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. modern day Hollywood, the status hub, the allure of fame, the city that says, I am well. Laodicea, the financial hub, the allure of fiscal strength, the city that says all is well. And then Athens, the intellectual hub. The roadside marker reads, the allure of mental ascent. The city that says, if I think hard enough and work smart enough, all will remain well. But the late Catholic priest Charles de Foucault leaves us with this single paragraph. And it is this one truth, this potentially life-altering truth, that I want to overlay to on this. And it's not just a current reality. It goes back to A.W. Tozer in the 50s. It goes all the way back to the time of Christ and well before. That people who walk this planet invariably find themselves in a world of nervous activity that occupy time and attention but can never satisfy the longing of the soul. So this Catholic priest who was killed when a kidnapping attempt went wrong in the Sahara in the early 1900s writes this: God didn't attach salvation to knowledge or intelligence or wealth, nor to long experience or rare gifts that are not given to all. He attached it to something within the reach of everyone, absolutely everyone. Jesus attaches salvation to humility, to the act of making yourself little. That is all it takes to win heaven. And Paul says, we are made right with God by placing our faith in Jesus Christ. And the Bible is a book that is filled with simple moments. Moments when a real God met real people like you and I and forever punctuated the timeline of history. And could today be a day when you sign a personal covenant between you and God and say, yes, I do? Does the course of your life, your personal journey, your unique trajectory, does that need to be even ever so slightly altered to more fully align with His purposes and His plans? As we close, I do want to make this acknowledgement, this disclaimer. God strategically places people in prominent roles, the Hollywood motif, people that hold positions of influence and status. God, in His economy and His wisdom, He does, in fact, place believers in prominent roles of influence. Secondly, the church includes those and needs those who are heavily resourced, the Laodicea motif. And thirdly, His kingdom embraces and should always embrace those who love God intellectually, the Athens motif. But the question of the morning really is, how can God leverage my role, my wallet, and my mind in better keeping with His purposes and His plans? And what may it require of me? Because, and I close with this, and then Pastor Steve will come and close in a word of prayer. Because the God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and He doesn't live in temples that we create with our hands, and He's not served by you and me as if He needed anything. But He Himself is, as the God of eternity and as the God that is intimately acquainted with your life and mine, He is the God that determines the times set for you and I, and the exact places where we should live. And then this question I insert into Acts 17, chapter 24, why? And then the Bible answers it. God did all of this so that men and women would reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. In my personal evaluation, there is no greater moment, and dare I say, ongoing moments and renewed moments in one's life than the moment when a person is fully yielded to the heart and mind and will of God. All my gifts, all my talents, all my resources, all my regrets and my yesterdays, he will do much like what a recycle man does. A recycle person in that line of work takes what nobody else wants, and yet they somehow make something beautiful of it. That's the kind of God we serve, someone who can take what nobody else wants, and he can make something beautiful of our lives. Thanks for receiving Birgit and I and our 16-year-old daughter Tatiana today. And we'll certainly be around for a little while after the service, as Pastor Steve has stated. And
His birth and what that means for us, we are too often distracted by just life. And again, not that what life has to offer us is bad or wrong, but I think we perhaps unintentionally hope to find fulfillment and meaning and deep sense of peace through these things. And they are only pointers to what can truly fill us and complete us. So before we come to the table and